I don't want to break up Kvius of a Sunday morning shiur. My brother tells me that usually Rabbenevich gives the shiur on Ksubis. So, you know, I wanted to think how Hanukkah could really connect to the sugyas that you're up to, and I think it actually is relevant. The Inyanei Hanukkah are really relevant to the exact daf that the Chabura is up to. There's a Talmud Chacham, he's not alive anymore, Rabbi Yeshua Ehrenberg. He wrote the Sefer Dvar Yehoshua. I don't think everyone really heard of his Sefer until Rav Eliashiv saw a copy of his Sefer, and Rav Eliashiv was very bothered with one of his tshuvas. So then Rabbi Yashiv wrote a tshuva to argue with him and to prove him wrong. And really, he did him a tova, because Rabbi Yashiv really made his Sefer famous, because Rabbi Yashiv put it in to his Kovitz tshuvas, all of his tshuvas, and he said, I saw on the Sefer Dvar Yehoshua. So this Rabbi Yehoshua Ehrenberg, his tshuvas became Sefer. He's a Talmud Chacham. He wrote that when it comes to Hanukkah, he said he came up to Yerushalayim. He's from Bnei Brak. He said he came up to Yerushalayim and he saw the minig of all of the people in Yerushalayim is to light Hanukkah neros outside of like the takana originally, that you should al Pesach beso mi bachutz, the Gemara in Shabbos says you should light outside the house. And he says that he doesn't think that this is necessarily correct. He doesn't think that you should do so. And he writes a tshuva why he thinks it's wrong. So Rav Eliashiv said, when I received the Sefer, he writes a tshuva. This is where he gives him publicity. He writes a tshuva against the Dvar Yehoshua, and he starts off the tshuva and he says, so I thought that you were going to come to Yerushalayim and you were going to write a tshuva and you were going to defend the practice of those that light inside the houses even though they're in Yerushalayim, even though the Gemara tells us that the situation shouldn't really require one to light inside. And now, because the Gemara develops, the Gemara says, when there's no sakana, meyikar alacha, you should light outside. And when bezmana sakana, we're madlik bifnim. So I thought you would, right now there's no sakana, Rabbi Yashiv writes in Eretz Yisrael. So I thought you were going to write a tshuva to defend the practice of those that are really mistaken, and that light inside, so that you would write a tshuva that once the minig was, and there was a sakana once, so then we have a defense for those who still light inside. But to write a tshuva, says Rabbi Yashiv, that what all of us are doing is wrong, that we're lighting outside in Yerushalayim where there's no sakana, so then Rabbi Yashiv says, now I got to prove you wrong. Now I got to write a tshuva that you took it one step far, too far. And the truth is, I'm not going to get into the debate, but it very much connects to whether or not Bizman HaGemara, when you would light, the halacha was that you should light outside. So what would happen if someone would want, for whatever reason, his wife told him, I don't want to go outside, I don't want to light outside, we'll light inside today. So was he Yotze the mitzvah or not? And it seems to be the Pashtus, there is Machlokas Rishonim, but the simple understanding is that was not accepted la'alacha, and one was obligated to light outside. And that seems to be the simple understanding of the Shulchan Aruch. So the Dvar Yehoshua, he argues that once the sakana came, once the situation changed, so then Chazal were oker the din. They totally transformed the halacha, and they said there's a new makam halacha. The new makam halacha is bifnim. And the Dvar Yehoshua, he suggests that once Chazal changed something, mipnei ha-sakana, so they were oker the halacha, and it never reverts back just because that sakana is no longer existing. And the Dvar Yehoshua, his defense for this, and that's why it really connects to Ksubis, is because he says originally, the Mishnah writes, the Gemara that you're up to on Daf Gimel writes, that Besula Nisis Biyom Arivi, a woman should get married on the fourth day. And the Gemara says, Chazal were oker it, Mipnei HaSakana. And he quotes from the Shita Mekubetzes, I think this is Rabbi Yeshua Ehrenberg's Shita Mekubetzes, but the Shita Mekubetzes writes, and that's the practice, and that's the practice, Bizman HaZeh, that we don't find that people really once there's no sakana anymore, they reverted back to the Ikar Halacha. Because he says, he explains, that once there was a sakana, so Chazal were Oker the Din, they transformed the Halacha, and even when that sakana is no more, is not in existence, the Halacha is Bifnim now until Bias HaMashiach, until there's going to be a transformation Legamre. And he has other proofs. One of the proofs is from Ksubis. Another proof is that originally the halacha was that we would blow Tkiyah Shofar. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah tells us that we would blow the shofar in the morning because of Zrizin Makdimim. And the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says the only reason we blow the shofar when it comes to Tfilas Musaf is because there was a sakana and we didn't want our enemies to realize that we were blowing shofar. And that sakana is not in existence anymore, the Gemara says, but we don't change the halacha. The Gemara has a lashon, we're worried that maybe it will come back to a sakana. So he says, there's kama v'kama rayas, there are proofs that you see when Chazal changed things for a sakana, it doesn't revert back, and that's where Rav Eliashiv writes a tshuva to defend, to argue with him, but that's the connection to Ksubis. So really, Chanukah is really found in the Gemaras that you're learning in the Chabura. So I'd like to discuss, not that sugya, but I'd like to discuss a sugya, which also I became aware that it's halacha l'maisa in Eretz Yisrael, that the shaila is, do you need a hechsher? Usually, we have hechsher on things that we eat. We have kashrus organizations that they give a hechsher on food. So the shaila is, when it comes to Chanukah, do you need a hechsher on the oil or the candles that you use for hadlakas neiros? So why should you need a hechsher? You're not eating anything. Why should it have to be kosher? So I'm telling you right now, if you go to Eretz Yisrael, there are hechsherim, I'm sure none of you are surprised, but there are hechsherim on the oil in Eretz Yisrael. And what is this debate about, and do we have to be makbid about this? I don't want anyone to think that I'm here being sent for kashrus organizations. Yesterday, I'm supporting goyim, kashrus for goyim or for menorah. But that halacha l'maisa, that's the shaila. Do you need a hechsher for the menorah oil? So this debate was not only introduced now in Eretz Yisrael. It's really brought down in two places in Shulchan Aruch. The Shari Tshuva, in his commentary, it's in the Mishnah Berurah. He has a commentary on Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Chanukah. He quotes a machlokes between the Shar Ephraim and the Shev Yaakov. The Shar Ephraim was the one who introduced that when it comes to hadlakas neiros, even if you're madlik the shemen is made, is either cooked. His case was that it was shemen of butter, and it was cooked in a fleshik pot or with fleshik mamashis, like pieces of grease of flesh of meat in the pot that it wasn't cleaned out, and that candle or that oil formed to be basar v'chalav. So his question was, the Shar Ephraim, whether or not this is kosher to be used for hadlakas neiros Chanukah. So the question is, and he is machshir, so we can relax. We just have to defend why that should be so. There are three potential problems when it comes to hadlakas neiros Chanukah, why this should be an issue, and how do we get around the issue of basar v'chalav? And the argument is that A, basar v'chalav, the Torah says three times, you should not cook meat with milk. The Torah tells us that there are three isurim. There's one, an isur bishul, you're not allowed to cook basar v'chalav. There's one, an isur achil, you're not allowed to eat basar v'chalav. And one is an isur hana, that you're not allowed to get any positive benefit from basar v'chalav. So the question is, first, off the bat, I'm getting hana. I'm lighting my hadlakas neiros Chanukah with basar v'chalav. So I now am being nene, because of this basar v'chalav oil, so now I was yotzei a mitzvah. I got a geshmak out of the oil of basar v'chalav. So how does one deal with this question? So the question really relates to another sugya, which is the sugya in Rosh Hashanah and Daf Chav Ches Amud Aleph, which is the sugya of mitzvah slav lehenes ninu. The Gemara tells us that if I took a neder not to be nene, I took a vow that I don't want to get any pleasure from this shofar, and comes Rosh Hashanah and I have to hear Tkiyah Shofar. So the Gemara says, mitzvah slav lehenes ninu. this person could blow shofar for me, or I take a vow that he should not give me any pleasure. And the Gemara says he's allowed to blow shofar for you. Because we don't view mitzvos as pleasurable things. The driving force, the impetus of doing a mitzvah, the Gemara says, is not to derive pleasure, but rather to fulfill the will of God. As Rashi writes in Rosh Hashanah, La'ol al tzavarehem. It's a yoke, it's a work, it's a burden. We have to fulfill our dues, and that's the way we approach mitzvos, and it's not necessarily an enjoyment. So the Gemara says, mitzvos lav lehenes ninu. So we should come out with the conclusion that this should be totally mutter, because we are being mekayim a mitzvah when we light hadlakas neiros. However, if you look in the back of the Gemaras there, in the Balamor, by the Dapei Arif, so the Balamor suggests that that's not the case when it comes to mitzvos derabbanan. The Gemara only meant it, says the Balamor, when it comes to tkios deoraisa. However, when it comes to the other tkios, all the rabbinic tkios, all the other rabbinic mitzvos, so then we don't view that as in under the rubric of mitzvos lav lehenos nitnu. Really, that is lehenos, that is for hana, and you would make a distinction between something biblical and something rabbinic. If that's the case, so we're up the creek, because the mitzvah of Chanukah, Hadlakas Neiros Chanukah, is a rabbinic mitzvah, is midrabbanon, and then you would be getting hana from the mitzvah, from the basar v'chalav, by accomplishing the mitzvah. Baruch Hashem, there are other Rishonim that disagree with the Balamor. The Ran there argues with the Balamor, and he says, a mitzvah is a mitzvah. Why should one make a distinction between a biblical mitzvah, a mitzvah d'oraisa, or a mitzvah d'rabbanon? If it's a mitzvah, so then we don't look at it as a pleasurable, as the impetus being pleasure, being hana, so therefore it should be a mitzvah just like a mitzvah min haTorah. So one really has to analyze, what is the debate between the Balamor and the Ran? What's going on over here? L'chora, the Ran's argument is a good argument. I don't really walk around and light Hanukkah neiros for my own pleasure. That's not really a pleasurable act. It's not the way I get hana. It's not the way I have a good time. So why does the Balamor think so? So if you look, there's a sefer, Shar Yosher, written by Rav Shimon Shkop. He writes in his first shar, he says he thinks the debate is a crucial debate, how to assess and how to understand mitzvos midrabbanan. You see, there's a famous machlokas between the Ramam and the Ramban, whether or not every derabbanon, every mitzvah derabbanon, is a fulfillment of a broader mitzvah of losasar min haTorah. And the Rambam is of that opinion, that even though I'm only obligated in this mitzvah, midrabbanon, the rabbis obligated me, but at the end of the day, when I fulfill this mitzvah, I accomplish something min haTorah, because the Torah told me to listen to the rabbis. So the Ramban disagrees with the Rambam, and he says there are different levels, and the rabbinic decrees and the rabbinic mitzvos don't touch and don't approach at all to the biblical mitzvos. And he says, I'll give you a proof. He says, the Torah tells us that if we have a suffik, so when it comes to a biblical mitzvah, suffik d'oraisa l'chumra. When you have a suffik on a biblical inyan, a biblical concept, a biblical topic, so then you have to be machmir, you have to be more stringent, because suffik d'oraisa, it's a question min haTorah. However, when it comes to rabbinic mitzvos, that's not the case. And suffik the rabbanon lekula, when it's a rabbinic topic, so then we are allowed to be lenient, we are allowed to be mekel. So the Ramban challenges the Rambam, if you're of the opinion that every rabbinic mitzvah really involved within it is the mitzvah d'oraisa to listen to chachamim of lo sasur, so if that's the case, then every suffik d'rabbanon, every question, every suffik, anytime you have a doubt when it's the topic of a rabbinic mitzvah or rabbinic prohibition, so one should have to be machmir, one should have to be stringent, because it involves biblical decrees and biblical mitzvahs. So the Shar Yosher defends the Rambam, and he explains that there's a difference between a biblical mitzvah and a rabbinic mitzvah. Even if, at the end of the day, the Rambam is correct, that at the end of the day, I am in fulfillment of a mitzvah min haTorah once I listen to the rabbis to do this thing, but that's at the end of the day. You see, rabbinic mitzvos, writes the Shar Yosher, is not the specific maisa ha-mitzvah. It's not specifically that this inherent act has value. A rabbinic mitzvah is the driving force of a rabbinic mitzvah is to listen to our rabbis. How do we listen to our rabbis? We do A, B, and C. But it's not that the rabbis were focused that you need to do A, B, and C in this inherent way, and there's inherent value in those actual actions. The inherent value of a rabbinic mitzvah is the result, is the fact that you are listening to the rabbis. Whereas it comes to a biblical mitzvah, no. When the Torah told you to shake a lulav, so the Torah is saying to you, shake a lulav, do that action. And that is the mitzvah. Not the result, but the maisa ha-mitzvah is what's crucial. And that is why the Shar Yosher writes that he thinks that according to the Rambam, even when you're involved in a rabbinic issue, when it comes to the maisa, when it comes to the iser, the possible transgression, that's not what the Torah was focused on. It's at the end of the day, the Torah, when it says lo sasser, was focused on, are you listening to the rabbis, or are you rebelling against the rabbis? So if the rabbis never told me that in a situation of doubt, in a situation of suffix, that I have to be machmir, so at the end of the day, I'm not rebelling against the rabbis, and rabbinic decrees are totally different than biblical decrees. Whereas when it comes to a biblical decree, a biblical mitzvah, the Torah told you, don't eat this. The Torah told you, shake a lulav, do this. The Torah told you not to do that maisa, not to do that action, and stay far away from that. And that has an inherent problem with that action. There's an inherent problem to be involved in that. It's not an inherent problem. It's not a problem in the result. It's a problem in the action itself. So therefore, in a situation of suffix, I have to remove myself and stay away from that possible action. And I also have to remove myself. I have to also be stringent when I'm not sure if I fulfilled the mitzvah. So I have to do it again because the Torah wants me to do that maisa. The Torah doesn't want an end result that I'm listening to the chachamim like we find by mitzvahs derabban. So it could be, writes the Shar Yosher, that's the pshat in the machlokas between the Baal Maor and the Ran when it comes to mitzvahs lav lehenes nidu. You see, just to develop this one step further, it's just to bring an example. The Nesivus has a chiddush in Simin Reish Lamed Daled that he writes, what happens if I sold you something and it has a problem, it's prohibited for rabbinic reasons? So you're going to come back and you're going to say, Mekachtos, this was you tricked me. I want my money back. So the Nesivus makes a distinction between a biblical prohibition and a rabbinic prohibition. And he says, if you were violated something, bishogeg, when it came to a rabbinic prohibition, so then you don't have to do tshuva. You didn't do anything wrong. It's an unbelievable chiddush. He says, when you do something min haTorah, bishogeg, of course you did something wrong. That's the whole concept of chayiv chatas. That's the whole concept of korbanos. There's something inherently wrong with this action, although your intention was not to rebel against God, but this action has a problem within it, so even though I did it bishogeg, it was by accident, I have to do tshuva, I have to bring a korban. However, the Nesivus writes, when it comes to a rabbinic prohibition, and you transgress that prohibition, bishogeg, you did so by accident, without intention, so the Nesivus says you don't even have to do tshuva. You're totally set, you're fine, you're okay. The Nesivus explains why. The explanation is exactly the way we explained. Because when it comes to rabbinic decrees, it's all the result. What was my goal? Was I trying to rebel against the rabbis? Or was I trying to follow the rabbis? And if that's the case, in this situation where I was bishogeg, there was nothing inherently wrong with what I did. I just have to listen to the rabbis. So the similar way that even in a case of suffix, a case of doubt, I'm listening to the rabbis, so too in a case of shogeg, I'm still considered listening to the rabbis. I was not rebelling against the rabbis. So I did not should transgress any violation by doing this prohibition, by transgressing this prohibition, bishogeg. So when it comes to mitzvahs lav lehenes nidu, so the Shar Yosher of Shimon Shkup explains, in order for me to get hana, when it comes to isuri hana, we have to evaluate and we have to discern whether or not, what's the driving force on this thing is aser v'ana to me. So why am I using this? Is the main impetus for me to use this to derive hana, or no? Is the main impetus and the reason why I'm using this for another purpose, like a mitzvah? So mitzvah slav lehenos ninu means, when it comes to this mitzvah, the driving force for me to do this action is for the mitzvah itself. However, when it comes to mitzvahs derabanan, argues Rav Shimon Shkop, the driving force to do the action is not considered the mitzvah itself. The mitzvah is considered a regular act. It's a mundane act. It's just that in the result, I will be listening to the rabbis. I will accomplish a mitzvah that I didn't rebel against the rabbis, and I followed the rabbis. So when you evaluate the actual Maisa, the action in itself, it's a mundane act. It's not an act of a mitzvah. So therefore, he suggests the Bala Maor follows suit with the approach that we explained according to the other Rishonim, that mitzvahs derabanan are not inherently assessed based on the Maisa, based on the action itself. So therefore, the driving force is really going to be considered hana in this scenario. And therefore, when it comes to mitzvahs derabanan, one will be prohibited. Two, you will not have the ptur, the exemption of mitzvahs lav lahenes nitnu when it comes to rabbinic mitzvahs, because the driving force for the action is really not the mitzvah. It's only the goal, it's only the result that's going to be the mitzvah. So therefore that maisa, that action is still considered a hana type action and is not exempt by mitzvahs lav lahenes nitnu.
That the driving force is not to rebel against Rabbanan.
But when you're assessing the action, the when you're assessing the action, it's still considered a Maisa Shalana. I can't stamp that Maisa and say, oh, that's a Maisa Mitzvah. When it comes to a Mitzvah Deraisa, you have to evaluate that Maisa. Is that a Maisa Shalana or is that a Maisa Shal Mitzvah? That's where Rav Shimon Shkop is getting. He creates a new language. He says, it's a Maisa Hamahana or it's a Maisa Mitzvah. So there's no such thing as a Maisa Mitzvah on a rabbinic level. There is no Maisa Mitzvah. All the function of mitzvahs is only, did you listen to the rabbis? So there is no Maisa Mitzvah. I can listen to the rabbis if the rabbi would tell me to dance up and down. So that's also a Maisa, that's also a Mitzvah. So there's no inherent value to the Maisa itself.
So if there's no Maisa Mitzvah, the default is Hana?
Right, correct. That's why you're doing it. There's no Maisa Mitzvah, there's no Mitzvah Lava Hanazah. So why are you doing it? You're obviously doing it to enjoy yourself. So that's a problem with Isuri Hana. Exactly.
So it's more of an intention with the Rabbanan.
Yeah, exactly. That's why the Nesivus goes to the mind-boggling chiddush, and we seem to paskin like this. If you did it b'shogeg, don't worry about it. Relax. When it comes to Deraisa, that's whole parshas Vayikra. You have to bring korbanos. You have to bring a korban chatas. When it comes to the rabbinic mitzvahs, no. It's the end result. It's whether or not you followed the rabbis. So if you did so with shogeg by accident, you didn't have evil intentions. So then you're off the hook.
But that's not true about Hanukkah, because by Hanukkah you say clearly when you light it, you say El Rosa Mavad, and that it's not for Hanukkah. So the whole matter would be maybe for the Shamash.
So it's a good point, but we're discussing right now the mitzvah. Your point is that the rabbis tell you that you can't get hana. There's an added prohibition to the hana.
But
I'm asking a different question. I'm asking the question of the mitzvah, the hanas hamitzvah. I am fulfilling a rabbinic mitzvah by doing this. So I can only avoid getting the hana from that if this is considered mitzvah slav lehenes nitnu. The Torah really, if it wasn't for the concept of mitzvah slav lehenes nitnu, I wouldn't be allowed to accomplish a mitzvah, even on a biblical level, with anything that's aser ba'ana. It's only that when it came to biblical mitzvahs, the Torah came with a concept, mitzvah slav lehenes nitnu. And the Bala Mor argues, and he says that will not apply to rabbinic mitzvahs. And we explained, alumnus, why that should be so. So if that's the case, if it's not going to apply to rabbinic mitzvahs, the rabbis could have came along and say, you're not going to get any hana, you shouldn't do this by the or, you shouldn't do this by the or, don't count your money, don't read your book by light. That's all very nice. But I still got hana out of fulfilling a mitzvah in the Rabbanan from this nair, which is Basar V'Cholov.
That's
problematic. The rabbi said you have to deal, that's for a separate reason. We actually... We spoke about that last year. Last year Hanukkah, we spoke about what the nature of the Isra Ana that the rabbis told you, Va'asr Lahanus Behem. That might be that the fact is because the Rishonim and Shabbos write, the Ran and the Balamor, they suggest that it could be that the Neros have a level of Kedusha. That the Rishonim suggest, the Balamor suggest, that they actually relate back to the Neros in the Mikdash, and they have some sort of Kedusha, and that's why Chazal patterned after the Neros in the Mikdash, that you really shouldn't be allowed to get any Hana, because that's a zilzel. It's a disgrace for the mitzvah. But it's not necessarily meaning that I'm not getting Hana from fulfilling the mitzvah. It's a very good point, but it wouldn't necessarily help for our question. So, this is the first debate. Baruch Hashem, the Shari Tshuva in the beginning of Ahas Chanukah, he takes care of the first issue and he writes, we don't pass like the Balamor.
So, all right. According to the Rambam and the Ramban, it's okay to use...
Well, the Rambam and the Ramban really don't debate this issue. I was usually... Rabbi Shimon Shkup uses that to explain the Shita of the Balamor, or we didn't really discuss the Rambam and the Ramban Shita when it comes to Mislav Lehenes Ninu. But we did discuss the Ran and the Balamor, who did have two approaches when it came to Mitzvah Derabanan, whether or not you have the concept of Mitzvah Slav Lehenes Ninu, that we don't view this as a Maisa Shel Hana, rather we view this as a Maisa Mitzvah, so we paskin like the Shita of the Ran. And even by Mitzvah Derabanan, we don't make a distinction. Mitzvah Deraisa, Mitzvah Derabanan, no distinction. Mitzvah Slav Lehenes Ninu, even by Mitzvah Derabanan. So we took care of the first possible prohibition of lighting Hanukkah candles with Basar V'Cholov. What about the Isser Ana? Mitzvah Slav Lehenes Ninu. Fine. Now we have another problem. The other problem is the Torah also said, don't be Mevashal Basar V'Cholov. The Torah told you not to cook Basar V'Cholov. And you're lighting a fire onto this oil, and technically you're really cooking Basar V'Cholov right now. So really, you're doing exactly what the Torah said explicitly, Lo Sivashel. So how do we do that? So there's a chiddush of the Chibina Rav. The Chibina Rav, who's not so known, but he was a tremendous, tremendous gong. He was a Rav in Chibin, and then he actually moved to Shari Chesed. He moved near Abarbanel. I think he lived around Ibn Shaprut. Someone once showed me where he lived. It's a tremendous, tremendous gong. His svarim, I don't know if you ever heard of them, his svarim are called Chuvas Dovev Mesharim. They're Chuvas. Tremendous gong. They say, they just came out last year with a biography about him, and they have unbelievable stories, like really great stories about his gaonis and what a person he was. But there was one story that I thought was striking. You know, they were very poor in Shabin. And he wanted to make sure that there was Torah in the community, and that the children, no matter what happens, the children should be learning. The children have to learn Aleph Beis. When they're appropriate age, they have to learn Gemara. And he was very busy. He had to get a malamed. He had to get someone. So he found someone in the town. He said, Do you know any Gemara? Is there anything? The guy said, I learned once Beitza. I know a little bit Beitza. So he said, can you be the Malamed? He said, yeah, I'll be the Malamed, but we have no money here. We don't have a Gemara. How am I supposed to teach them? So Chibina Rav said, not a problem. He sat down and he wrote Gemara B'Beitza for him. He sat down and he wrote the Masechta for him. Like, that's the type of goan that you're dealing with here. And that's just one of the stories. So Chibina Rav was approached with a question that apparently, when he was the Rav, there was a problem with the chocolate. There was a question whether or not the chocolate had, I'm sorry, chocolate, but the chocolate had Basar V'Cholov in it. They thought maybe that while they were producing it, somehow, listen, if it could happen in Erez Chanukah, it could happen in chocolate. So they thought maybe there was Basar V'Cholov. So they came to the Chibina Rav, and they asked him, the only way we can really test this in the experiment, in the laboratory, is if we cook it. We have to, I don't know exactly what they had to do, but they had to do something scientific in order to cook it, and then they will be able to test whether or not there is actual milk and meat inside the chocolate. So the question is, the Torah says you can't cook it. So the Chibina Rav said, I have a heter. He said, I'll tell you, you can do it. Why? He said, because the Rambam writes, it's actually a Rambam in Tumas Meis. The Rambam's discussing a few different Isurim, Tumas Meis. The Rambam's also discussing the Isser from one to have marital relationships with one's daughter. The Torah, when it addresses that, the Torah just says you cannot have relations with your granddaughter. Bas bito. But the Rambam says it's obvious that one cannot have relationships with your daughter. The Torah didn't even have to say that. Because the whole source of the Isser of Bas Bito is that she's an extension of your daughter. So of course, one is not allowed to have relationships with your Bas, with your daughter. So similarly, the Rambam puts into that category, and therefore one is not allowed to eat Basar v'chalav. And that's why the Torah was allowed to say, lo sivashel. The Torah never says, lo sochel basar v'cholav, don't eat basar v'cholav. The Torah says, lo sivashel basar v'cholav, do not cook basar v'cholav. So the Kesef Mishnah writes, on that Rambam, the Rambam is saying that the driving force, the reason why it's usher to cook basar v'cholav, is it's because on a biblical level, it's very interesting, we find that the Torah set up some gedarim, some fences, in order to make sure that we don't transgress the Isser of Achilas Basar V'Cholav, of eating Basar V'Cholav as well. And within the system, in the Torah itself, usually the rabbis set up fences. Usually the rabbis are the ones that set up safeguards. But sometimes you have, by biblical mitzvahs, that the Torah itself went out of its way because it saw that if we're going to allow a person to cook Basar V'Cholav, then that's going to lead to someone eating Basar V'Cholav. But the driving force and the reason the Kesef Mishnah suggests why Bishul Basar V'Cholav is prohibited is because it will lead to eating Basar V'Cholav. So the Chabina Rav had a tremendous chiddush, and this is heavily debated, that maybe if one accepts the rationale of the Kesef Mishnah, so maybe if a person is just doing an experiment, or a person, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik I think also had this opinion, if a person is just doing an experiment, so then there's not a problem, because you're never going to come to eat the Basar V'Cholav, and the whole Isser Bishul Basar V'Cholav, to cook Basar V'Cholav, was only within the scope, within the foreseeing the Achilas Basar V'Cholav, that one will come to eat it. So Chavina Rav was Matir. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, one of the debaters, he writes a tshuva in Har Tzvi, and he says he thinks the whole suggestion of the Chavina Rav is incorrect. Now, the reason why I'm telling you this is because if the Chabina Rav is right, so we're home free. We took care of the second issue when it comes to Basar V'Cholav. Because no one, I hope, no one will come to eat the oil or the wax of their Hanukkah candles. So when you're going to be Mavashal, the Basar V'Cholav, so you're not going to come to be eat it. So, according to the Kesef Mishnah, according to the Chabina Rav, it should be totally fine. It should be like the science experiment on the chocolate. However, the problem is, the Har Tzvi rejects the Chabina Rav. He disagreed, and he thought the chocolate should have been prohibited. Why? He says the Chabina Rav, the Kesef Mishnah he really attacks, forgot another Rambam. The Rambam tells us that, you know, there's a concept in Halacha called Ein Isser Chalal Isser. There's a concept that if this piece of meat is already usser, is prohibited to eat this for reason A, so even if reason B comes into the situation, Ein Isser Chalal Isser. It's only Usser because of reason A. It's not going to be added on top of that Isser B, because you don't pile up Isurim. If it's already prohibited, A is Usser, that's the reason it's Usser. It's not Usser because of A, B. So the Rambam says, when it comes to the Isser of Chelev, so the Rambam says, you are not allowed to eat, you're not allowed to cook chalev with chalev. Chalev is the fats in the animal, so it's considered basar, but chalev is also prohibited to eat. So the Rambam says, not only are you not allowed to eat this, and the reason I'm not allowed to eat it is because of Isser chalev. One is not allowed to eat fats. That's an Isser d'oraisa, one is chayev kares, if he eats chalev. But the Rambam says, yeah, the Isser Achila is not going to exist when it comes to Basar V'Cholav, because it's already Usser, and Ein Isser Chalal Isser, and the second Isser is not, the second Isser Achila is not Chal, does not fall upon the first Isser Achila, which is because of Chalav. So the Isser Achila of Basar V'Cholav does not apply. However, the Rambam tells us, you still can't cook it with milk. You still are not allowed to... You still are prohibited Isser Bishul. So again, Ein Isser Chalal Isser tells me that I'm not allowed to eat this for reason A. not for reason B, and that's why I'm not allowed to eat this piece of chalev, this piece of fat, because it's chalev, not because it's basar v'chalev. So even once I cook it, so it's not going to be prohibited, because it's, even if I cook this piece of chalev, which is meat, but it's also fat, that I'm, if I cook it with chalev, with milk, so it's not going to be prohibited because of basar v'chalev in achila, because it's already usher as fat. However, in bishul, in the second iser, when it comes to basar v'chalev, it will be prohibited. So you see, writes Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, that the Rambam wasn't concerned that the iser achila of basar v'chalev was not going to exist over here. This is a scenario that it's usher ba'achila for other reasons, for the iser of chalef, for the iser of eating fats. The iser achila of basar v'chalev, not to eat basar v'chalev, will not exist in this scenario because there was already a prior iser of chalef. So, and still, the Rambam tells us one is not allowed to cook the chalef, the fat, with milk. So Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank said, very nice, it's a beautiful pshat, I like your pshat, but it's wrong from the Rambam. The Rambam seems to say, black on white, that one, that the Isser Bishul is independent, the Isser to cook is independent of the Isser Achila, and even if one will not come to eat it, it will still be prohibited.
Yeah, but so close up, there's an Isser Achila here.
Oh, you're killing me over here, Avram. So what Avram's saying is a tremendous chiddush. Avram's saying is that it could be, how does one assess, and this was I thought to defend the Tribune Rav, and I thought to defend the Kesef Mishnah, from the question of Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. I thought like this. When it comes to Ein Isser Chalal Isser, we've just presented that if something is already usser to eat it because it's chalev, so then, that is already, it was prior to the basar v'chalev, it was already usher to eat it, so the second iser does not fall on top of this item, and you're not going to be chayev and usher ba'achila for two things. Maybe that's not the case. Maybe, when the Torah told us, ein iser chalal iser, so it could be that the iser really is chal. The iser is existing. The Torah just told me that I don't punish a guy for two violations. Ein iser chalal iser doesn't mean that the iser is non-existent. Is non-existent, but rather it means that the reason you punish him in court, the way we assess this is that there's one violation over here. We punish him for one thing and we don't give him two sets of lashes. However, the iser is still there in terms of our situation. There was a tshuva of the Nodeb Yehuda.
So you're saying if it's kares and something else?
No, it doesn't matter, and I'm not saying that's the separate question. That might be Isser Chomer, but I'm saying even without that, when you say Ein Isser Chalal Isser, many Achronim, the Avne Meluim, the Nodeb Yehuda has a tshuva where he discusses, it's a fascinating tshuva. A guy was not such a kosher yosher guy, and he was sleeping around, and he had an affair with this woman. And it ended up that this guy came to the Nodeb Yehuda, he said, this woman that I had an affair with is going to be my mother-in-law. I'm marrying her daughter. This guy has a lot more issues than but his question to the Nodeb Yehuda was, really, once, if you're mezana with a woman, so she becomes prohibited to her husband. So his question he asked the Nodeb Yehuda is, do I have to tell my father-in-law? So the Nodeb Yehuda writes a tshuva discussing whether or not he has to tell his father-in-law. So the Nodeb Yehuda, within the discussion, he questions whether or not the Isser Sota, the fact that she was Mizana, whether or not she really becomes usher to her husband. Because maybe when they had Bia, when they had relations, she was a Nida, and the second Isser of Sota was never Chal, never fell on top of it, and maybe you couldn't be Mekel. But then the Nodeb Yehuda suggests, he says, but wait a second. But we know this chiddush of the Avdim Aluim and my chiddush that when the Torah says Isser Chal Isser, it doesn't mean the second Isser is non-existent. It means that the second Isser, we don't punish him for so. We don't give him categorical punishment. But the Isser is there. It's still there spiritually, and you actually transgress something in the Torah. For instance, the Gemara tells us in Yevamos that it would chapa nafkamina, even though it would be a practical implication, even though we're not going to punish the guy for the second Isser. But the Gemara tells us that Rishayim and Tzadikim are not buried in the same Beis HaKvaros. They're not in the same cemetery. And the Gemara says, if you have someone who has 70 Averos, or you have someone who has 71 Averos, they have to be separated. They have to, L'kovro ben Rishayim Gemurim. You can't put them in the same cemetery. So the Gemara says, what if I have 70 Averos, and my friend has 70 Averos, and one ain't Isser Chalal Isser. And one Avera that wasn't fully Chal, but it was there, not lenient penalty, but it was there for, he did it. So the Gemara says, he can't be in the same Beis HaKvaros as him. He can't be in the same cemetery. Because he did really transgress an Avera, so the Issa really is in existence, and he has to be in his own cemetery. However, we can't give him capital punishment for that second Avera. So if so, if this is true, so then we could possibly defend the Chabina Rav and the Kesef Mishnah. When it comes to chalev, when the Rambam told us that you can't cook chalev with milk, so the Tar Tzvi or Tzvi Pesach Frank suggested, he said, you see from the Rambam that the Isser Bishul, the Isser to cook, is independent of the Isser Achila of Basar V'Cholav, and even if one will never come into the violation of Achilas Basar V'Cholav, you're still in violation of the Isser Bishul. Maybe that's not the case. Maybe when it comes to the case of chalev, even though it's before the Isser Basar V'Cholav came into existence, even though it was Asr, Mishum Chalev, maybe it's still Asr to cook it, and there is still an Isser Achila, but it's just not Chal in capital punishment. But it is in existence, and it would chapa nafkamina for which cemetery you're going to get into. So if that's the case, the Isser Achila is really still there, and the one Rambam told us that one can't cook Chalev with Chalev, he was telling so, Lishitaso, even though he holds that the Isser Bishul is dependent on the Isser Achila of Basar V'Cholav. So maybe we can suggest that there wouldn't be an Isser Bishul over here when it comes to the Neiros Chanukah, because the Isser Bishul is dependent on the Isser Achila, and possibly, again, no one should pass on La Halacha like this, because it's a major debate, possibly one could suggest that you're not over the Isser of Bishul Basar V'Cholav when you're cooking the Chanukah oil.
Shouldn't Bishul be, I mean, by definition, to improve the quality of something, to make it more edible, to make it, you know, tastier? And here we're not really...
I mean, when the
we're
Torah...
We're just consuming the fat.
It's a very good point. It's a good point. But the Torah didn't seem to make a distinction. I mean, if you're going to make it that it's not... I mean, you're
not
doing.
A bad cook would be allowed to do it.
You're doing an act of bishul. You're doing an act of bishul.
If you burn everything, you still chayav for bishul.
But you're just burning it. You're
first of all, before you actually got to the stage of burnt, you really okay. Let's say I burnt a steak with cheese on, right? So I'm cooking it before I get to the stage of burnt. I forgot it in the oven and I messed up, but you know, you wouldn't say that your wife is not cooking beforehand. Like when your wife,
but he's saying by the menorah, you're not really doing anything.
You're taking something which is already complete,
and now you're
consuming it by burning it. You're not taking something which is raw and improving it to the point of being edible.
So you're saying it's just not.
It's not bishul.
It's not bishul.
It's not bishul because it's not edible, or
no,
it's
not improving it.
Uh-huh. And similar with the answer with Rabbi Narav, you're not making something better. You're taking something and you're consuming it for the purpose of an experiment.
So we don't find that they made a distinction within bishul, but it could be that that's along the lines of what the Tribune Rav is saying, is that you have to have a future focus on Achila. So it could be what you're saying is right. You have to improve it because the nature is that it has to be for edibility. But I wouldn't necessarily say that if it's not considered cooking, if you're doing it, you're not improving it. If it's still at the end of the day you're going to eat it, I would still think that you're in violation
of
bishul.
You're saying it's more like sreifa than it is
like in bishul achar bishul. Now you have something that's already cooked. You've improved it to the point.
Right. So that's a tremendous. That's not clear. It's a major machlokus in the Achronim. The Eger discusses it, whether or not in bishul achar bishul applies to basar v'cholav as well. So it's a good point, and I think it really connects to the issue that the Tribune Rav is suggesting. But you don't really find that they said this is a Maisa Bishul, this is not a Maisa Bishul. I think you really have to play it based on whether or not inherently the Isser Bishel is connected to the Isser Achila. If it's just because of the Isser Bishel, I think we would view everything as an Isser Bishel.
Do you say in Isser Lisser B'Makom Safek?
B'Makom Safek?
It's a Safek to begin with. Even though you say Safek, the Raisa is the Achmer, I don't know to the extent that you say in Isser Bishel Isser.
Why not? If it's Usser, it's Usser.
But it's not really inherently Usser, but it's a Safek.
The Torah said Safek. The Torah told me Safek the Raisa L'Chomer.
Yeah, but to the extent that Ein Isser Chal Isser.
I mean, it has to fit into the rule book of Ein Isser Chal Isser, meaning if it's going to add another Isser, I don't want to, there's a lot, if it's going to be Kolol, other things, but it could be, if it's not adding anything, and if it's no more Usser than the first thing, I think it could be Usser. So we come to the last stage, and the last issue, which is really a very important issue that it really has to be discussed. When it comes to things that are Usser Bahana, there is a debate. There's something called Ketute Mechdas Shiure. The Torah told us if something has to be destroyed, something like Avodah Zarah, something like, let's say the Gemara discusses in Sukkah, if you use a lulav of an Asherah tree, of an Avodah Zarah tree, so that has to be burnt, and the Gemara says Ketute Mechdas Shiure. Literally the translation of that statement is its shear, its measurement is cut off. Ketute Mechdas Shiure. So the question is, how does one view the Ketute Mechdas Shiure? So and in terms of our question is that the Basar B'Chalav has to be destroyed. Now, again, it's a question if this issue only applies to something that has to be burnt, or even Basar V'Chalav, which has to be buried, but some Rishonim are of the opinion that it's even things that have to be buried. That's a question. And the Shari Tshuva develops this scenario that if you're going to burn it, so then you do say Ketute Mechdas Shiure. So let's leave that aside now. Let's assume that there would potentially be a problem of Ketute Mechdas Shiure, which a lot of the Achronim are assuming. So do we now, because this Basar V'Chalav is Asar Bahana, so does it lose its shear of shemen, the amount, the measurement that Chazal required us to use when it's to light when it comes to the mitzvah of Adlakas Neros Chanukah? So in order to answer this question, I thought that we should really look into a sugya in Erevin, and with this we're going to finish. The sugya in Erevin tells us that when you have an alleyway, a mavoy, so the Gemara says if you have three walls, so you really, in order to make a Rishus HaYachid, you need four walls. But if you have three walls, and the Gemara says, you have a lechi, close to one of the walls, you have a stick that's 10 tefachim high, so that counts as a fourth wall. The Gemara says you can also have a korah, a beam on top, that connects to the two walls on the side, but that's a way to virtually, halachically, make a fourth wall and form this mavoy, this alleyway, into a Rishus HaYachid. So the Gemara says, what happens if the lechi or the korah is from an Asherah tree? Is Asur Bahana? So do we say that we don't view the measurement here? Do we suggest Ketute Mechdas Shiure? And it's as if the thing is totally burnt up and is gone, and you don't have a shear over here, so therefore it can't help us in the laws of Erevin, or no? So the Gemara says when it comes to Lechi, the Rambam Paskins, when it comes to Lechi, it's permitted, and when it comes to the Korah, it's prohibited. And why is that so? Why is that so? Reb Chaim asks on the Rambam, I don't understand, and the Ravid already challenges the Rambam. A Lechi has a shear that it has to be 10 tefachim tall. Okay, it doesn't have the same shiurim that a korah has in its width. It doesn't have to be wide like a korah. The Gemara says that the width of the lechi, of the beam, could be even mashahu. But what about the shear that it has to be 10 tefachim tall? So if it has to be 10 tefachim tall, so you don't have a shear of 10 tefachim over here, asks Reb Chaim. So Reb Chaim suggests that when it comes to Ketute Temechta Shiure, a fascinating chiddush. He says that when it comes to Ketute Mechdas Shiure, again, how do we literally translate that? The Torah cut off its shear, its measurement. It's not like the way I was suggesting, that we view it as if it's burnt up, and physically we don't view this beam over here. That's ridiculous. You walk up to the beam, you see the beam. Whether it's Asur Bahana, whether it's Avodah Zarah, it's not Avodah Zarah, the beam is actually standing there. So, What does it mean, ketute mechta shire? It means it loses its halachic identity in terms of measurement. The Torah says when it comes to a lulav is only a lulav for sukkahs if it has four tfachim. And if it doesn't have four tfachim, it's not a lulav. So if a shir gives something a halachic identity, so then ketute mechta shire suggests that once that shear is removed, because this is asr ba'ana, the shear is removed, so then we don't visualize that halachic identity. However, there are other type of shiurim, Reb Chaim suggests. Not every shear is like the case of lulav, is like the case of hadas, that in order to give it halachic identity, it has to be a certain size. And otherwise, if it doesn't have that size, it's just a branch. No. When it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, when it comes to an alleyway, a mavoi, so it could be that the walls are not inherently, the shear in the wall is not the inherent value of the wall. It's not that it has a halachic identity as a mechitza l'shabbos, but rather, it's a practical shear. The Torah says that your makom, your area, your alleyway has to be surrounded physically and practically by walls. What are the measurements practically of that wall? It should be 10 tfachim high. But the shear is a shear that's focused on the area, on the makom. It's not that the Torah said we need hilchos mechitza that should be sown lishma and should have halachic identity parallel to those of lulav. No, it was a circumstance. The Torah wanted you to be in an area that is considered rishus hayachid, that practically is walled around by four walls. So when it comes to the lechi, writes Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, that the lechi is practical. It's just so that makom, that area, has four walls. And Rav Chaim suggests, when we look at the lechi that's Avodah Zarah, we don't say that the actual metzias, the physicality of this lechi, of this beam, disappeared. That's not the case. It's standing there. It's just kitute mechne shiure. It lost its halachic identity because it's lost its measurement. So that only applies to shiurim, which the halacha requires, similar to lulav, that it only has a halachic identity because of the shear. Reb Chaim, Reb Soloveitchik quoted B'Shem Reb Chaim, that possibly it's based on a Tosas and Shabbos, one can make a distinction between two types of walls. When it comes to the walls of Shabbos, there's no halachic independent identity inherent in the walls that it needs a shear. It's just practically the makom has to be mukuf, has to be surrounded by walls. That's practical. That's physical. That's a metzias. Even if it's asr ba'ana, even if it's an asherah tree, that exists. However, when it comes to the walls of sukkah, the Torah said, no, there is a metzias, there is a halachic identity to the wall. And Reb Chaim suggested that it could be the wall of a sukkah, which is more parallel to lulav, which have a shear inherently and has a halachic identity independent, so then it could be that the asherah, the avodah zarah wall, will be prohibited when it comes to the walls of the sukkah. So with this we'll close. If we take the analysis of Reb Chaim, so the korah obviously is not viewed in the same way as the lechi. Reb Chaim was only saying this is a lechi. Because it's not, maybe it's not exactly a mechitza exactly. It's a good question. Reb Chaim doesn't really develop that. But he clearly... Right, it does have to be Afshirim, but it's a chiddush that Reb Chaim saying the definition of the shiurim would be different. Meaning, Reb Chaim saying you can have shiurim until today, until tomorrow. As long as those shiurim are not
defining
the entity, so then that's why Reb Chaim's distinction between the two walls, the walls of Sukkah and the walls of Shabbos. It's a good point. But if we carry this back over to Hanukkah, if you look in the sugyas of Hanukkah, in Daf Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, so the Gemara has a question. The Gemara says, it has a debate. Kavsa Zakakla or Kavsa Ein Zakakla? If the light goes out, do I have to rekindle it? Do I have to relight it? Or no, I can let it be. So the Gemara says, well, I'll bring you a raya. The Gemara says, you have to light Hanukkah from Shkia until Achetichra L'Regel Menashuk, until the people leave the streets. So obviously the Gemara is saying that if it goes out, you have to relight it. So the Gemara says that's not a simple proof. That's not what the Gemara is suggesting. The Gemara wasn't saying that you have to continue relighting it until Achetichra L'Regel Menashuk. The Gemara gives two answers. The Gemara says either, Ilo Adlik Madlik, if you didn't come home yet and you weren't home at the first second, and you missed Shkia. So up until Ad Shetichlo Regel Min Hashuk, you should still light it. Or the Gemara says, Inami Lishiura. The Gemara was telling you a shear. The Gemara was telling you a measurement of how much shemen for Neros Chanukah one needs to be Yotzi the Mitzvah. So most of the Rishonim, Tosos, and other Rishonim think that this is a debate in the Gemara, this is an argument, and the first day of the Gemara says, and that's the way L'chachilu we paskin, you should really light from Shkia, and that's the Iker's Man Hadlaka. But the second day in the Gemara argued, and that's our practice, those of us who are busy, who can't get home so early, so when we come home later, we still can light later, even though it's past the time of Ad Shetichlo Regel Min Hashuk, because the Gemara was telling us a shear. There's a shear of Shemen. The Gemara wasn't saying you specifically had to light from Shkia until Ad Shetichlo Regel Min Hashuk. The Gemara was saying the amount of Shemen that's needed is the amount of Shemen that exists from Shkia until people leave the market. So we paskin that you can light even after Ad Shetichlo Regel Min Hashuk, even at 10 o'clock at night, you just have to make sure that you use that amount, that shear of shemen in the Neros Chanukah. However, the Rambam is not of this opinion. The Rambam holds that these two opinions in the Gemara are not debating each other. The Gemara was giving two different answers, and the Gemara was saying that the shear of Neros Chanukah is not a shear in kamos. It's not a shear in measurement that you need a specific amount of oil, but rather the shear, inami l'shiure, is that the shear of Chanukah is that one should light, to have candles that are lighting from Shkia until Ad Shetichlo Regel Min Hashuk. The Torah didn't say, the rabbis didn't say, like when it came to Lulav, that you need four tefachim when it comes to Chanukah. No. The Rambam is of the opinion you could even have one drop of oil. As long as it lights, the shear of Chanukah is a shear in Zman, a shear in time. As long as your candles are lit from Shkia until people leave the marketplace, that is the halachic shear when it comes to Neros Chanukah. So if this is the case, one could suggest that this debate would depend on whether or not Kitute Mechta Shiure would apply to Neros Chanukah. If you take the Gemara literally, and you say the Gemara was saying, and that's the way we paskin la halacha, the Gemara was saying, shiure, there's a measurement, there's a halachic amount. The Torah says, hilchos Chanukah, the Shemen needs a hechsher, you have to get the badatz on the Neres Chanukah, because you need a specific shear, just like you need a shear in a lulav, just like you need a shear in a hadas. You need a shear in the chefza of the Shemen. Inherently, there has to be a halachic identity to the amount of Shemen that I'm lighting. However, if one suggests like the Rambam, so it could be the Rambam would be of the opinion that there is no independent halachic identity to the Shemen. It's a practical halacha. One needs to be, it's exactly like the mechitzas on Shabbos. You need to make sure your area is walled. And you need to make sure that you have candles that are lit for this amount of time. How much Shemen you need? I don't care. If you have an experiment and you have you invent something that a drop of oil can last for this amount of time, that's totally fine according to the Rambam. There's no sheer inherent to create a halachic identity for this Shemen similar to the walls of the Sukkah. No, that's not the case. So if one suggests, like the Shita of the Rambam, so one could say that really there is no halachic identity, there is no sheer inherent in the oil, and that's possibly why the issue of Kitute Mechta Shiure, the fact that the sheer is cut off, physically it's in existence, writes Rav Chaim. It's there, the lechi is standing there. It's just halachically we don't see the shear, so if we don't have to necessarily see the shear, it's only a shear in time, so maybe Ketute Mechta Shiure would not apply to the Shemen of Chanukah as well. And with this I'll close. There's just many people know this, but it was based on this diak in the Rambam that the Briskerov, he lived across the street from a movie theater. The Briskerov took this Rambam, so we presented the Rambam. The Rambam says that the shear of Chanukah is not a shear in Shemen. It's rather a shear in Zman. It's amount of time it has to be lit. It should be when the people are around, until Ad Shetichlo Regel Min Hashuk. But then the Rambam has a striking lashon. The Rambam says, oh yes sir, or more. And it's strange. What does the Rambam mean? The Togmara gave us a shear. Okay, the Rambam is saying it's not a shear in Shemen. It's a shear in Zman. But what does he mean that it could possibly go longer? So the Briskerov suggested that basically the way we're explaining that according to the Rambam, the shear is not in the kamas, is not in the inherent amount of oil that's in the cup, but rather it's only a shear zman, it's a practical shear that it should be litten for this amount of time, for the time that people are around for Persume Nisa. So the Briskarov suggested, if you live in an area like a movie theater, that people are coming out after the 12 o'clock showing, and they're all going to see your porch, and they're going to see your menorah, so that's the Rambam suggests, oh yes sir, he was referring to the movie theater. He was referring to the Briskarov's apartment. He was referring to the fact that you could have Persume Nisa even above and beyond Ad Shetich L'Regem and Ashuk, even beyond the half hour that the Gemara presented, because the shear of Neiros Chanukah is not inherent, but rather it's relative, and therefore, if there are going to be people around, the Briskarov thought that he should light once again when the 12 o'clock showing is over. Yeshkoah.
Thank you, sir.